Your questions about business, career, personal development, and achieving the American dream are more than welcome. Call 855-MAKING-IT, 855-625-4648. Now, back to more Making It with Tommy and Todd.
We're back with Tommy and Todd Coast to Coast, and it is time for 2 Minutes with Tommy. The following is an excerpt from my book, The Way of the Rich, which is now available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and e-tailers worldwide. I'd like to talk with you for a few minutes about the power of words. The words we speak determine our success. This is both a practical and spiritual truth. The power and life of life and death is in the tongue. That's even in the Bible. We can speak negative and discouraging words, or we can speak positive and encouraging words. This is our choice. It is our choice what we will allow ourselves to think, to say, and to believe. This is the power that we have as human beings. The way our world responds is a direct response to how we perceive and create our world. Successful people realize that words have power. They realize that we can actually direct our world by the words we speak. Our words are like the baton of the orchestra leader. What we direct with our words, the world's orchestra plays back to us note for note and chapter and verse. We must choose our words carefully when speaking to ourselves. This is really important. Our self-talk has the same positive or negative effect as the words we speak to others. We must all learn to build ourselves up, to encourage ourselves, to pat ourselves on the back, and speak kindness, love, and respect to ourselves and others. That's 2 Minutes with Tommy. For more information on this and other tips on becoming more successful and rich, go to TommyRunvola.com. So, Todd and Brittany, when we left off, I think we were talking about Phil Knight.
Yes.
So, Todd, why don't you pick up where you left off, and I'll jump in.
Yeah, well, there's several facts. So, he has this distribution deal to sell Tiger shoes, whatever.
Sure.
So that's going well, but it never really took off. People don't really realize that. The company wasn't called Nike at the time.
Right.
And it never really took off. I mean, he went through all kind of problems. I mean, at one point, he was working as an accountant. And he still was working his full-time job and then going over Nike the rest of the day and night.
Yes.
And they got accused of kiting checks. Ooh. Trying to pay people.
Yeah.
I mean, they were hurting our money. The distributor over in Japan, I mean, they got into some problems, legal problems with them, and he couldn't sell the shoes anymore and blah, blah, blah. It was just a disaster, really. By the time, you got around to starting Nike. But in any case, he had a couple real good people that were key in the startup. And I learned just from his story about how crucial it is to have just two or three people that are really buying to the company.
Mm-hmm.
One guy's name was Jeff Johnson. He was a runner.
Yes.
And he just believed in Phil Knight and the company.
He gave the name Nike to Nike.
He gave the name Nike to Nike.
Yes.
He's the one that he would like go to the local cleaners and have them like sew in the soles of the shoes to customize them for the local runners.
Wow.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just real innovative, whatever. He's the one that drove out to Boston to get Nike started to start selling Nike over across the coast. And so just a lot of problems, a lot of near deaths Nike was experiencing. I mean, I'd say for the first almost 10 years that people don't realize about. They paid, like you said, Jeff Johnson gave them the name Nike. They paid $35 to get the logo made by mm-hmm. by some lady that was a graphic designer.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment, Todd. How important is brand to blowing up, a company? He paid $35 for the swoosh is what he paid.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was a lady named Carolyn Davidson, I guess her name was. And later, He was so grateful for what she had done and for that great $35 investment that he gave her shares in Nike.
Yeah.
I think 200 shares, which at that time were, you know, pretty substantial.
Yeah.
So how important is your branding to blowing up a company?
Well, you know, it's everything in this case, because the big move that Nike made was they were actually the first one to really use athletic endorsement as their main driver for their brand.
Yes.
I mean, you know, before people, you know, you might pay a company like to represent you, but they're the ones who really push it. And there was just a lot of shadiness going on. Like the guy that like got, we're getting the basketball players, Sonny Vaccaro, you know, it was like a lot of under the table, paying athletes under the table. And it was legal then. Like he would just pay the coach for a college team to have his people wear the shoes.
Wow.
And there was no laws against it or anything.
No, it sounds a lot like just bootstrapping. I mean, so much of Nike is bootstrapping. And then, you know, just like what happened with Rockefeller and a lot of the great bootstrapping entrepreneurs, rules and laws had to be made afterwards to prevent people from doing that original behavior that worked. So
it was a little bit of a wild, wild west on the endorsement
really
side. They just literally went, pay them under the table.
There was no endorsement model. There were no rules.
Pay these coaches to get their players to wear them. And then all this stuff. So they came on that. So they, you know, I remember that they said that they had like one of their big moments was they noticed like they would go out, you know, going out to the bars or something. They would go out and observe people.
Mm-hmm.
They would notice that the people wearing Nikes were actually, quote unquote, the wannabes, runners and stuff, and athletes of the actual top people.
Wow.
And so then they made the move to say, you know what? We're going to get the five top athletes in the world wearing our stuff, wearing our shoes at the time. And the rest will follow. And their whole branding strategy is, if you notice their commercials, they said, we're just going to talk to the pro athlete, not the buyer.
That was unusual.
And then we just get the consumers like, we're being let in on a private conversation with the pro athlete.
Yes.
And now we want in.
Of course.
And so it's something, because a lot of other companies followed that, because Victoria's Secret, their strategy was, let's get the five most beautiful women in the world.
Right.
And wearing our clothing, and the rest will follow. Well, Nike started that. Get the five top athletes, and they got the five top athletes in five of the top sports wearing their stuff. And like, it seems simple, but it's effective, and it's not, a lot of people don't do it.
Right.
But so that's kind of essence of their brand.
Yeah. You know, I always wondered, where did they get this name Nike?
Uh-huh.
And I didn't realize, you know, till I read up on this, that Nike is the goddess of victory.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, in Greek,
the Greek
mythology.
Goddess. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting.
Whedon, their other big move was, there was a small ad agency called Whedon and Kennedy. And people don't realize it was just those two guys.
Uh-huh. Whedon and Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah. And they were in Oregon, I believe, where Nike was located.
Right.
And do you know that when somebody told Phil Knight, because up to that point he had done any advertising, and they were now making good money. And someone told him, said, you know, you ought to hire an ad agency to get your messaging out. And Phil Knight said, when he met Whedon and Kennedy, he said, this is the, it was Kennedy, I believe, he said, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life, to actually hire an ad agency for Nike.
Really?
He was completely, like, against it. But he listened to it, and he trusted them, and he said, you need to get your communication out. And the rest was history. But it was just those two at the beginning. And their big thing was to tap culture. They said, let's not even really talk about the product.
Wow.
Let's tap what's going on in the culture.
Wow.
And do it so, you know, they would tap like, you know, the whatever's going on with the some war going on or...
So it created more emotional connection, you know, with people.
Some type of, you know, social issue. Mm-hmm. And they would tap into that. And they really got people feeling, you know, a strong feeling behind their product.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredibly interesting story of a company that... American success story.
Yeah. By the way, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tommy and Todd on Making It, and we're talking about the main man behind Nike, Phil Knight.
Well, you know, what I found out about Phil that really interests me is he's been successful in other businesses as well since his success at Nike. He invested in a small studio in the 1990s called Vinton Studios. And he had a son that had graduated from college and tried to have a career as a rap star, and that didn't work out. And he got him involved as an animator in this studio, his son Travis. And after some mismanagement in the company, Phil went from an investor to the owner of the particular company called Leica. And His son, Travis, took over the company, and they became very successful. And out of that came a real tragedy with one of Phil's other son, his son, Matthew. Matthew was in El Salvador doing a film shoot for the company and decided with some friends he would go scuba diving. And I don't know if you've ever been scuba diving, Todd. I have many times.
I have.
The deeper you go, the more pressure there is. And he went down to about 65 feet, which is not real deep.
Right.
They found out he had a congenital heart defect, and the pressure created caused him to have a heart attack, and he died.
Wow. Hmm.
Yeah, and it was a real tragedy. Thereafter... Phil, I don't know if it was because of this, but he later resigned from being the chairman of the board of Nike or the CEO of Nike, and took a backseat in the company thereafter.
You know, I had a client years ago that worked with someone who worked directly with Phil Knight. And they said that whenever he would want to get the strategy for the company right or see what to do with the business direction or whatever, he would go mountain climbing.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
Like,
wow.
He would go do something like that to, like, trigger his brain to actually, you know, think of something bigger, whatever. I mean, just there's so much that he's done. I mean, as far as like his exact combination of like behind the scenes, but you still know him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Staying under the radar enough, I mean, with his company, but keeping it above the radar when it comes to his products.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, one of my favorite statements he said, someone asked him, they told him, you know, why don't you put more money investment in your product innovation, whatever. And he said, they said, instead of so much money in advertising, he said, advertising is my product.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so he's come to that understanding from that first day.
Right.
To see that's his product. I mean, so that shows you like he's selling cool.
Yeah.
He's selling the image.
Well, and to the
and
point
it can be worth billions of dollars.
Nike, I think that the motivation and the advertising of get up and get your butt moving is more important, because at the end of the day, that's going to be what makes you buy the shoes.
Right,
right.
And makes you wear the shoes to wear them out to need another pair.
And Just Do It was another big turning point.
Well, yeah.
Well, Phil really Knight was a gifted athlete and a gifted entrepreneur. And Todd, you probably don't know this, but he did a 4-minute and 10-second mile, which compares to just the opposite of your 10-minute and 4-second mile. So...
Yeah, I don't like distance running. I was a 400 guy, you know. So, okay, you're listening to Making It with Tommy and Todd Coast to Coast. We'll be right back.
Your questions about business, career, personal development, and achieving the American dream are more than welcome. Email them to info@makingitnow.com. Now back to more Making It with Tommy and Todd.
We're back with Tommy and Todd Coast to Coast, and it is time for Making It or Breaking It. What do you have, Brittany?
Yep. Today we're discussing everybody's favorite topic, or at least a topic somebody would, people that would like to have more of a say in, and Making It or Breaking It is about taxes. Yes, the amount that you're paying the government out of your pocket, out of your paycheck.
Too much.
And who should pay more, who should pay less, and why?
Everybody else should pay more, I should pay less.
Exactly. All right. So, we are discussing flat tax versus the current system of having a percentage-based tax. Mm-hmm. Tommy, do you have the details on this?
Yeah, first let me state that
which one do you want?
I think I'm a flat tax guy.
Oh.
I kind of like that idea. Really? But I like any system except the current one because I think it's very abusive to most people.
Okay.
And nobody seems to be happy with it. And most of all, not happy with that organization called the IRS.
Hmm.
And first of all, you know, let me define what I understand to be a flat tax. And that
shouldn't take long.
That's right. It's a tax system with a constant marginal rate, usually applied to individual or corporate income.
Okay.
A true flat tax would be a proportional tax, but some implementations are often progressive and sometimes regressive, depending on deductions and exemptions in the tax base.
So basically we're saying
audience
one...
just went like, what are you talking about?
Right. What are you talking about? I have no idea what
can
I'm talking
now,
about.
Like,
that's the problem.
Define each part of the definition. So we're talking about a certain set percentage that would be across the board,
yeah,
correct?
Right.
So it's still a percentage, but it's one set percentage. Then I think the rest of the mumbo jumbo means that there's still tax exemptions, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
And we would all more or less be paying the same rate of taxes, which seems fairer on its face.
And you'd have some write-offs.
Yeah, and you would have some write-offs in certain iterations of the flat tax.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, look, you know, I understand. You make more, you pay some more taxes.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. You know, you are taking more advantage of several things that the taxes are paying for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There has to be a reasonable amount here.
Right.
Right.
But I think that everyone's taking advantage of the tax system in some way, so everyone should pay something.
Right.
That's not the way it's working.
Well, and here's the thing. To make the highest dollar amount, to be in that highest stratosphere, you are presumably the entrepreneur, the business owner. You know, most people don't get paid $2 million a year just straight, you know, salary, unless you're running the business.
Right.
So basically you're a top entrepreneur. So you're taking on so much responsibility, so much workload for the livelihood of the company and the livelihood of everybody else who works at that company. So you're putting your neck on the line more, you're risking more, and why are you the one paying 50%?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a great misunderstanding in the culture about businesses paying taxes versus individuals paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And the main difference is that a business takes all of its deductions.
Mm-hmm.
And then it pays its taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But an individual working for one of those businesses pays their taxes first,
mm-hmm.
and then they take their deductions.
Right.
And so it appears that corporations are getting a bigger tax break than individuals are.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be technically a little bit correct, although you can be an individual and run a business and pass those deductions through to your personal returns,
right.
Called
S4.
A subchapter S,
right.
Yes.
Right. I mean, again, I noticed a few months ago during the debates how it just struck me how Trump, you know, didn't pay any taxes in a certain year or whatever.
Yeah, but,
but
he was paying a lot of taxes in other respects.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, payroll taxes, all that stuff.
Right.
But the point being is that... you know, a lot of rich people, because of the capital gains laws or whatever, I mean, they're paying very little in taxes.
And they're encouraged to invest in their businesses and the economy and so
on. I agree with doing that.
Right.
But what we have is, you know, the super wealthy, they're saying, I'm going to avoid paying a lot of taxes because I have the super high paid attorneys.
Lobbyists and accountants and all that stuff.
Then you have people at the bottom, they pay nothing.
Right.
I mean, there's some statistic. Most people pay no taxes.
Exactly.
You know, and so the people that get killed are not the people just in the middle. It's the people in the upper middle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that's who's paying the most.
That's right.
And I think that's who we have to look, who the tax laws need to benefit the most.
Well, I think they would be benefited by a flat tax. I think they'd be benefited by a national sales tax and do away with income tax. You know, there are all sorts of mechanisms that could help those people, but I don't see a lot of incentive within government to really change the way we pay taxes.
Right. I mean, a flat tax has been proposed. I think Forbes, you know, the Steve Forbes.
Yeah, when he ran for president.
He ran for it, he said it, but it's just hard to see them that they're going to change it, you know, take money away from somebody who's already getting money in a certain way.
Well, they're going to find a way to get more tax money.
End of the show. Good show, guys.
Good job.
So, Brittany, how do the people get in touch with us?
Thanks for asking. Visit makingitnow.com. Check out all our behind-the-scenes stuff and our Facebook page.
All right. Well, that's the show for today, and keep making it.
This has been Making It, the source for information, insights, interviews, and in-the-trench advice for startups, struggling, and early-stage entrepreneurs and business owners nationwide.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, staff, management, or advertisers.
For more information, contact Tommy or Todd at 855-MAKING-IT. That's 855-625-4648. Or at their email address, info@makingitnow.com. Thank you for listening to Making It.